The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hubline and Dr. Josh Klapo. This is Adapt or Perish.
Welcome to Adapt or Perish, along with Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen. I'm Dr. Josh Klapo, and today we have Dr. Alex Hubline, president of Adaptogen, but we also have Dusty Rivers from Adaptogen. And Dusty, welcome to Adapt or Perish. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for inviting me.
You sent me your bio, and I don't know if you have this. I know Alex, I'm sure, has this too. This, you send a bio and it's pretty long because you have all your accomplishments and you don't want anyone to read it. And do you know what, Dusty, of everything that I read, I can't find your exact title at Adaptogen. I've got all this amazing information, actually something funny I want to talk about, but will you tell me just to begin with, what are you?
My official title, depending on the company I'm dealing with, is Director of Z Systems for Adaptogen.
Okay. All right. Got it. Well, let me brag on you for the rest of this stuff. Dusty is, this coming June 1st, big announcement from IBM, 45 years of tech innovation. And he was awarded by IBM the very first IBM Lifetime Champion Award for mainframe. We're going to let you talk all about that. And this is, Dusty has been doing this. We're kidding. I turn 54 on June 1st. And Dusty has 45 years on June 1st. So Dusty has been doing technology almost as long as I've been alive. And I know we mentioned before the call, he's been doing it. I'm a little bit older than Alex. And like Alex was just slightly out of diapers when this all started. I had just probably started shaving 54. Yeah, I was hitting puberty when this started. But Dusty, before we let you talk, I want to read this one thing you sent me in your bio, because I absolutely, of all the things you've done, tons of accomplishments, I love this. Dusty sent me his quote, no list, when he talks to colleges and he talks to colleges and universities, and he goes around speaking his no list of when he was in school. And I think this is just wonderful. And actually, Dusty, some of these... Now look at them.
Yeah, they kind of hit home, don't they?
Yeah, Alex, I guess we're not as young as we thought. But so when Dusty goes and speaks, when he was in school, there was no internet, no cell phone, no cable TVs, no microwaves, no PCs, no room computers, no CD. He had 8 tracks, which are usually adapted with a quarter to make them play. And kids wonder how I survived. Actually, Dusty, you're not as old. That's not as old as I sort of envisioned, because I actually have many of those things on the list. Anyway, I'm going to shut up. Talk to us. Talk to us about adapting over the years. I know you and Alex have a really tight relationship, and I know you are more of a classic rock fan than Alex, because in your bio, I'm seeing Metallica. I'm seeing all kinds of stuff besides Styx. So, I'm gonna shut up there.
Yeah, can we not talk about Styx today? I think this is a Styx free zone. Oh, is it in his bio?
It's in his bio.
Alex, I actually had a note in my bio that I said, I was awarded by IBM the first lifetime champion for Z, and then I highlighted that I had no grand illusion that I'd be the only one.
I didn't want to.
Well done.
I didn't. I know. I couldn't have said that. But I was waiting just to say. So, Dusty, talk about, and again, Alex and Dusty, y'all go at this. But, it is interesting, Dusty. It's fascinating that, you're getting a lifetime achievement award for 45 years. But talk about 45 years of what? I mean, again, I know there's lots and it's with IBM, but how would you describe the accomplishment that you're getting, or the award that you're getting, 45 years of doing what, would you say?
Well, the IBM Lifetime Achievement Award, the IBM Lifetime Champion Award was awarded 2 years ago. And I got involved, like I said, about 13 years ago. I was speaking at a conference, and two very nice ladies, Ann and Bev, said, "Are you involved in the Champion program, which is kind of an external facing program from IBM?" And I said, "No." And they said, "Well, you should be, but you have to self-nominate." And I'm like, "Yeah, I don't want to do that." So they helped me write a bio, write a nomination. And then I was awarded what was called the IBM Champion Award. And at that time it was for data. And over the years, every year you have to be, self-nominate, you have to nominate or nominated by others. And after about 12 years, I guess in 2020, they recognized me as a lifetime champion, which there was only one. I was the first one for the mainframe or Z. And then since then, there's been another one named, but there's about 35, I believe, people in the world that are carrying the lifetime designation in different venues. But I mean, over the years, and I was joking about when I came out of college, I knew COBOL and I knew database. And so that was my first job. And Alex will appreciate this. I hated writing COBOL. I mean, I just did not like coding. So I went into the database side. And so I kept moving into different technologies. And when I was working, I was actually working at Bell South, and they formed an advanced technology group, which I immediately kind of gravitated towards. And a really good friend of mine named Carol Burt asked if I wanted to be part of the team. We went in there and we picked five people from different disciplines. We looked at technology that was 5 years out at the time and said, what can we do? And everything we were looking at was not existing at the time. So all of us had to change. All of us had to learn and, use the word adapt. We had to basically adapt to new technologies. And then after that, we did a joint venture with an Irish company, and we basically provided technology to allow the mainframes to participate in all the new distributed technology. And I worked there for 6 or 7 years. And then I was actually at a show, and I met the owner of, at the time it was GT, a guy named Joe Ganim. And I said, this is the coolest technology I have seen. And so I joined, at the time it was GT, now Adaptigent, in August, it'll be 18 years. So over the years, what I have done has changed. I mean, I was joking that when I started, what I was doing when I started still exists, but that's not what I do today. So mm-hmm. I work. And so what I talk about and what I do today, everything is, pretty much new.
So Dusty, there's an old saying that, the more that things change, the more they stay the same. And
that's a lyric from a song. I'm going to Google that. Y'all talk.
Oh, no. It definitely is. In fact, I bet that lyric's in like probably dozens of songs. I'm thinking of Rush here. Rush has a great song that
of course you are.
A bit about that. Yeah, no, I know. I'm just like Dr. Josh with Styx. I am with Rush. But, when you look at some of the technology evolutions, I mean, we've over the last 45 years, we've seen just phenomenal progress in technology. I mean, my wristwatch probably has more power, computing power than, a lot of the big mainframe systems did back in the 70s. And it's been an extraordinary journey. It's actually one of the reasons I got into technology, because it's always changing. There's always new things. But, when you look at some of these mission critical Z series systems, this stuff's been around and people are still using it, right? I mean, big banks, big insurance companies, manufacturers, et cetera. I mean, they still run a lot of their core business processes on these technologies that were invented 45, 50 years ago, and they've endured, whereas many technologies have kind of had their heyday and then quickly declined, and we don't even talk about them anymore. What do you think? Why do you think that is? Why do you think this one specific type of technology has endured for so long and has kind of been the backbone of a lot of the huge companies that are out there that we work with every day? What do you attribute that to?
I think it's the sheer, I hate to say it, but it's the sheer power. I mean, when I was joking, and one of the things in my list of my no list was there were no PCs. I mean, when I came out, the only computer available was a mainframe. And so many companies started there and they built their basic systems on that. And then, for a while there were multiple mainframe vendors. There was Hitachi and Amdahl and IBM, and IBM just basically crushed the rest of them. And they kept putting power and power and more power and just the scale. You got the reputation of scalability, secure. I mean, most of the time you don't ever hear of a mainframe being hacked. So being secure, being powerful. And then with the newest one, it's even more powerful. And I think that, for me, what I see is a lot of companies look, especially in banking and finance, which we deal with a lot, is that's kind of their bread and butter, and they don't really want to take the chance to move off of it. And I think that's kind of where it's kind of been that tried and true tested system. And, you know, from what I've seen, there's, you know, they're adding more and more power.
So this is from the layman in the group of the three of us. I think that's, I mean, that is so interesting that, as Alex was saying, Dusty, you know, it, why did it stick around? Why? I mean, I guess I'm going to ask the same question. What has tried to replace it? What is maybe related to it? You know, because again, for those of us who are probably more lay people, you know, we think, we hear mainframe and we think old. What would be an equivalent or near equivalent of sort of a more modern technology that tries to do the same thing? Or is there literally nothing that can replace, nothing that is a proxy or substitute for mainframe?
Well, you're going to hear a lot about cloud computing, and the cloud, depending on which cloud you use, you know, it's a lot of processors with a lot of scalability, a lot of elasticity, which means you can spread out and create workload. So there's a lot of cloud systems that are looking more and more like they have the capability, but more and more companies are saying, yeah, I can move parts of it over there, but I can't move it all. So there's a new term, and I know Alex talks about this all the time, is the idea of a hybrid cloud environment, where a company realizes that I'm going to run part of my workload onto the big mainframe, but I can put part of it over in the cloud. And then they run into the kind of the problem of how do I have those two talk to each other? And so I think cloud is going there. It was distributed systems for a while. And I think right now you're going to see more of, you know, the word hybrid cloud. And, you know, since you guys are quoting song lyrics, you know, I would say to some people, when they talk about the mainframe, nothing else matters.
Oh, nice. Nice way to work that one in, Dusty. Well,
I just quick, and I won't completely derail us. I will tell you, I did Google. I don't know that you're going to appreciate this. The two main songs that came up with both that lyric and that title, The More Things Change by Bon Jovi, and The More Things Change by Cinderella. Yes.
Ooh, that's not good company, is it? Right? I mean, Cinderella.
I know. And
it was kind of a flash in the pan, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah. So anyway, I just wanted to let you know that's a little too big. Well, actually, I had one question. When you think mainframe, again, and particularly with you all, Adaptigent, large systems, large financial systems, bank, help us understand for our listeners who are not in giant corporations, who you know, are not steeped in technology. When I think mainframe, how small of an organization might I see mainframe computing in that maybe I wouldn't think about? Or is it literally only, you know, so gigantic multi-systems types of companies?
You know, I think there's different degrees of mainframes. There's a smaller mainframe, and we're seeing, you know, some of the smaller banks, even some of the grocery stores, some of the hotels. And it used to be there was one. There used to be, it was funny because there used to be a cruise line that actually had a mainframe on each ship. And it was that because that's their only power. So, you know, you can find smaller, they kind of ride the gamut of the big number crunching machines down to the smaller ones. And probably most of your startups are not going to be mainframe. You know, and also you're going to be kind of seeing kind of a shift towards some of the mainframe software is going to be able to run in the cloud. So, you know, you're going to see kind of a morphing, or I should say, since I'm on this show, adapting of technology to that model.
Yeah. So Dusty, one thing that's always struck me as interesting is that, you know, we've learned a lot in the last 45, 50 years about writing software and developing systems and innovating in hardware. And, you know, it's been a constant evolution. You know, we've gone through different generations of computing. We've gone through different paradigms. We've gone through different sort of different flavors of the day or the decade or whatever. And And, you know, what's always amazed me is that not only are these systems still around, and I think it's worth clarifying that the hardware has improved over time, right? So people aren't running these applications on the mainframe on like 50-year-old hardware. The hardware has continued to evolve and improve roughly at the same rate that other types of computing have evolved and you know, increased at. But, you know, the applications, a lot of these core applications were designed, I mean, a long, long time ago, 30, 40, sometimes even 50 years ago. And it's always amazed me that, you know, they're still there. I mean, despite the fact that we've learned all this stuff over the last 45 years, these guys seem to have gotten it right a long time ago. Maybe you can talk a little bit about that. I mean, why do you think that these guys, you know, 40 years ago were able to write applications that honestly are still working? They're still running most of your credit card transactions and, you know, processing your insurance claims and things like that. To me, that's truly an amazing part of it. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think at the time everything was built for speed. I can remember, you know, there was a technology that at the telephone company they used to talk to, when you called in and you talked to a service rep, which most of the times today you do that on the internet, you don't even see a service rep, is when you gave your name and account number and the service rep typed that in, they wanted a response back to that rep by the time the key bounced up. And so they would call that key bounce response time. Is everything was written for speed, for efficiency. And, you know, one of the things you mentioned that is at the American Airlines, where we did one of our projects, is we were actually using a piece of code that the mechanics are using now on their mobile apps. And we saw a message and it had the date of 1978 in it. So you're absolutely right. There is code that is still running. And it was written for high efficiency. It was written for scalability. And I think, you know, a lot of the technology that when they developed the early mainframe, the being super techie, the queuing, the things that were written for, you know, parallel processing, they got that right because they had to, because at the time there was no other option, but they've basically strengthened so much of that. Is, I mean, if you look at things they're doing today. And, you know, one of my favorites is in a distributed system, you have to keep up with the time. On the mainframe, there's only one clock, if you will. But if you're running in 30 systems, how do you figure out all those 30 systems running on the same time? So, I mean, something as simple as that, they didn't have to worry about a lot of the things that they worry about today as far as networks or latency or distributed systems. They were running on one physical piece of hardware. So they had to be efficient.
Gotcha. Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense.
So again, another layman's question, as you all are talking, is it safe to say, or is it fair to say that while our technology has evolved and sort of our understanding of doing things, were many of the foundational goals similar? Like I'm hearing you talk about queuing and efficiency and scalability and, you know, those kinds of things. Well, and power and all those things. Well, I mean, that's still goals. Those are still goals now, even though we have different software to do it. I mean, is that part of it that the people, the folks who design mainframe, the goals were, the foundational goals were maybe still the same? We're still trying to achieve the same kinds of things, just do that better and faster and more efficiently? Or was it fundamentally going after something else?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of both. To give an example, you talk about speed. I mean, anytime that someone talks about a mainframe, they talk about power and response time and scalability. And the machine that was announced a couple of weeks ago, they put out a number, which I thought was phenomenal. It can do 300 billion transactions a day. I mean, if you think of that, and that's one box. I mean, if you think of the power and the speed, the world today, it's changing, and it's, you know, more and more is needed. I mean, if you think about it on the devices we have now, I was joking about no cell phone is really, you know, calling what I have and what you have and what Alex has is more than a cell phone. It's a, you know, it's a personal device. I mean, if you can't find your cell phone, you know, I know this, I'm not picking on Alex. If Alex can't find his schedule, he doesn't know what he's supposed to do with his wife that night because she puts things on his calendar. And so on the mainframe, you know, it has to be even more powerful than all of that. So I think the early designers kind of got it right because, you know, they were the early, I hate to say pioneers, but they were the early pioneers getting this stuff out there for the industry.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Dusty. I mean, I was reading an article a couple of days ago, and it was talking about the Voyager space probes. And I think these things were launched about 45 years ago, sometime in the kind of mid 70s or so. And, you know, they're so far out now that it takes the signal when they send data back that it takes like 21 hours at the speed of light for the signal to get back here. And these things that they developed back then, they are still working. I mean, they're still sending back data. They're trillions or however many miles away from us. So it almost seems like there is some truth to that old saying that, you know, they don't build them like they used to. It seems like we've moved into this, talking about cell phones and things, we've almost moved into this era of disposable technology. I mean, everybody gets a new mobile phone every couple of years, right? But it seems like this stuff has really endured. Do you think there's anything different maybe in the mindset that people had back then, you know, other than just sort of we need to write it efficiently and make it speedy? But do you think the mindset has shifted in technology over the last 45 years when it comes to things like that?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, when we used to have a data center, is if something, you know, things just didn't break electronically. And there was also, you know, fault tolerance, failover. It just couldn't go down. And it used to be that if there was a piece of hardware, you know, a board or something, the engineer could come in and actually, they would fix that board and they would plug it back in because it was cheaper to fix it. These days, they just rip one out, throw it away and put another one in. It's more of that disposable mentality of, hey, I'll just put a new one in. And in those days it was working at Bell of engineer coming in and he's got his soldering gun on a board, you know, takes the board out, fixes it, puts it back in. So I think it was more of it was built to last because it was the mentality of we got to keep it going. We'll just fix it. We'll just fix it until it finally falls over.
Do we have anything? This is another great giant question. Do we have anything like that? I mean, I guess, would you consider, I don't even know. Is it, I mean, do we get as fundamental in like how we pour foundations for a house? So is it bricks? I'm trying to think of something that has stood the test of time functionally, even though it has adapted, it's still essentially the same. Is there anything in technology besides mainframe?
That's
a good question.
It is a good question.
I mean, we can't sit in silence. I was hoping we'd all be able to just rattle something off.
Well, like I'll tell you one I've seen recently. You know, okay. I was, you know, we did the episode a few weeks ago on the war in the Ukraine. You know, the Ukrainians sunk a big ship that the Russians had in the Black Sea. It was called the Moskva, and it was like the flagship of the Russian fleet. And I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing that they were able to take out this flagship, big heavy cruiser. And I did a little reading on it, and I found out that this thing was built back in the mid 70s, like around. And so this ship lasted for like 45 years, right? So I mean, I don't know about you, Dusty. I mean, the only thing I can think of is some of the military technology that's out there. But other than that, I have a hard time thinking of any better examples.
No, I mean, if you think of like software, you know. Software comes and goes, but if you look at some of the software that was written for the mainframe, you know, I grew up on something called IMS, which is a transaction system, and there's a CICS system. Both of those have been around for over 50 years, and they're still working and they're still viable. So it's kind of hard to come up with something that, you know, is still there. I was thinking of military, like airplanes. Some of the airplanes are still, you know, like if you look at a, you know, the jets that are flying today, you know, most of them have been around for a while and they just, you know, they just change out the engines and keep flying.
So is this like my Subaru that has 200,000 miles or my Chevy truck that's got 300,000 miles, but it's still good. We just keep switching out the parts. Truck still runs same way.
Kind of.
I'm stretching. Well, so I, here's another question I have. I mean, Dusty, you've clearly adapted over the years and now, you know, and you've been with Adaptogen for a while. And I know Alex has educated me greatly about sort of how Adaptogen comes in and has these hybrid solutions and allows companies to sort of not have to make radical changes and be able to do what they need to do. Given your experience and your history, what is your role? I don't mean your title at Adaptogen, but like, how do you see yourself functioning at Adaptogen and its clients? What functionally, what are you doing and what do you bring just given your experience?
A lot of that is the experience. I've worked with a lot of companies globally and I go in and I've already done it. So a lot of times when customers will say, we're trying to do X, I know why they're asking. I know what they're looking for. And one of the things is I actually, you know, I work in as a consultant. I also do a lot of the implementations. So as an example, when we went into a company, they said, we want to do this to allow our mainframe to our mainframe transactions to participate in our new environment. And we've got this room full of consultants who said, it's going to take us 6 months to do this one interface. And then I, you know, I can say, okay, well, watch with the tool we've got, let me show you how to do that. And I can do that in 30 minutes. So with the, I mean, I'm serious. And Alex,
no, you know, that's a sale for y'all. That's great.
No, the thing is, you know, so my, one of my biggest challenges was when Alex started, as I said, here's what we do. And he goes, no way. And I said, let me show you. I'm serious.
I did say that. I was like,
did you call him young man? Let me show you, young man.
Young whippersnapper. Let me show you how this works.
But it's when we got, so my mind is going in. I work on talking to customers and it's kind of the, let me show you. I mean, if we get to, let me show you, most people are like, wow, I can't believe this exists. And you know, the I'm kind of the hired assassin, if you will, is, you know, Alex sets them up and I take them down because he's convinced them that we can do this. And they're sitting there saying, there is absolutely no way you can do it this easy. And then it's like, okay, go show them. And so, you know, that's kind of what I do. And also, you know, when I'm talking at like conferences, we have people, and even on some of the IBM webinars, we have people say, you said this, that's not possible. It's like, yeah, let me show you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, I can verify Dusty's story. I didn't believe it when they were recruiting me to join the company and all that. I was like, I don't know here. They seem to be making this look a little too easy, and it's not easy stuff. So Dusty, you know, I guess maybe one of my last questions for you is, you know, we've seen this technology evolve over the last 50 or so years. You know, since I was in college or maybe shortly thereafter, you know, a lot of people have been predicting the death of the mainframe, right? They've said, oh, this stuff's all going to go away in the next 3 or 4 years. It's going to be replaced by this new flavor of the day technology. And yet here we are decades later, and these systems are still cranking along. They're still doing things securely, reliably, scalably, high performance. I mean, how do you see the future of you know, these technologies going forward? If we were to go out 4 or 5 years from now, what do we see that looking like? What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I think, you know, that statement, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. I kind of adapted that on one of the webinars. And I said, the more things change in the mainframe, the more things get better. And I think it's, you know, they're kind of allowing new people to come on. They're allowing different environments to where it's not my old mainframe that I started with. It's like there are new kids, you know, both of you are kids, but the new kids are coming up saying, yeah, I don't want to work on the mainframe. Hey, you know, that system you've been developing on for the last 6 months is actually a mainframe. So they're actually making it look, you know, the user interfaces, some of the user experience. And, you know, so, you know, using another line there, you know, they're not fading to black. They're basically, they're basically saying they're not giving up. They're just
riding the lightning, right?
Well, yeah, yeah, that's true. They're riding the lightning, and they're not asking for whom the bell tolls. They're just saying,
"Oh wow, this has gone south quick."
I know. So, I mean, is it also safe? Just the way you described it, I think it's really interesting with the user interface. Just as we're sort of winding down, but I mean, is this also just to get more cliche? Is this this is not your father's mainframe? I mean, is it, you know, like the Buick's been trying to do for years and years and years? I mean, is that a reasonable parallel that, you know, the core is there, but there have been refinements, even if some of those refinements are, I know it's not fair to call them cosmetic, but is that a fair analogy that the core is there, but it looks and feels different, but the strengths have remained the same?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think the core systems and some of the add-ons, in fact, you can, you know, most of the, you know, they've made it where, you know, actually a lot of the cloud systems you can actually run on the mainframe hardware now. So, you know, it's going to be not your, you know, your father's mainframe or my mainframe. And, you know, so, the, you know, the funny thing is when I go to these, I was joking. My tagline is always the mainframe rocks. And somebody said, why is that? And I said, well, pretty much if you talk to anybody who works in or around the mainframe, they're all music fans. And the majority of them, and Alex will attest to this, the majority of them are classic rock. They've got their favorite mm-hmm. group, their favorite t-shirt, their favorite band. And it's like, you know, you'll see people sitting there working on devices, and they have no idea that the actual back end is a mainframe system. And, you know, that's... It's good for me seeing, because, you know, a lot of the young kids coming up, we talk to them, and I work with one of the mentor programs, and they say, well, how do I get started? And one of the guys, he graduated in his class. He was top of his class. There was five guys in his class, and he went into mainframe and they made fun of him. But right now he's a VP at a bank, and all the rest of his friends are doing Java code and they don't have jobs.
Dusty, you started this off, and Alex helped me here, because I don't know if this is way off, but when you started, you talked about sort of very relatively few people in your position across the country, across the world, in terms of the longevity, still in it, still working mainframe. And then now you've also now just in the last few sentences have talked about sort of this younger generation coming up. Wanting to play in this mainframe game. Who would you consider yourself? Or I'll ask Alex. Alex, is Dusty the GOAT when it comes to mainframe?
I think Dusty may be the GOAT. I've never met anyone with the level of experience and skill that he's got, right? I mean, he is at least that's my take on it. I think he's had tremendous contributions to this whole thing, and Dusty's a pretty humble guy. You know, he was literally the very first Lifetime Z champion from IBM. But what he's not telling you is there's only one other guy to this very day who is the other Lifetime Z. So he's one of two in the world. So I'd say he's either the GOAT or the runner up to the GOAT. But I think the GOAT.
That is awesome. Dusty, congratulations. Obviously, thank you for joining us. Congratulations for what you have accomplished. Congratulations for what you do. And, you know, you've said it. I mean, I don't like the parish part, but you do represent someone who has continued to adapt and thrive in that. I mean, that's what this whole show is about. And I would say, you absolutely top Alex and I when it comes to classic rock references. We're trying, but you've absolutely topped us there. Thank you again for joining us. You're always welcome to come on to Adaptive Parish. And that's all the time we have. So I want to thank everybody for joining us on this session of Adaptive Parish. Make sure you stay tuned to Tony Curry Radio, because that's where you're going to hear another killer episode of Adapt or Parish.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.